Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
It would have been a classic coach non-answer to a very benign question. I mean, it's the one thing after a 51-17 game when the question of who's going to play quarterback at Alabama has been up in the air since last year's national championship game. It was the one question that needed asking. It was asked in a benign way, and he overreacted. And part of the reason is because when you're Nick Saban, you can overreact. And people are going to defend you, just as we talked about with Urban Meyer. You can do what he did, which is obviously way, way, way worse than this, and people are going to defend you. Urban Meyer's 73-8. He's won a national title. Nick Saban's won 5 national titles at Alabama. So the fact that he apologized tells me that he realized that if there's one entity in college sports you don't want to mess with, it's ESPN. Because after all, they just completed a 4-part series preseason on Alabama football that sanctified Nick Saban. And he, like, I'm sure would like to continue to be sanctified. So one person tweeted at me, this was interesting to me. Nick Saban isn't paid to be polite. You know what? None of us are paid to be polite, Chad. It's just something you do as a matter of course. You're polite to people unless they give you a reason to be rude. Maria Taylor did not give Nick Saban a reason to be rude.
You mentioned, you used the word overreaction there, and that's certainly what Nick Saban did. Are we overreacting to Michigan's loss to Notre Dame in terms of what it says about Jim Harbaugh, or is all the criticism on Jim Harbaugh, is it justified right now?
It's funny, I just wrote a column for the Washington Post for later this week on that very subject, Chad, and I think, yes, people are overreacting to one game. It was a road game with a new quarterback against a good Notre Dame team. We don't know how good, but certainly a good Notre Dame team. Notre Dame always has plenty of talent. But at some point, Jim Harbaugh has to start beating good teams. He's now 1-6 against Ohio State, Michigan State, and Notre Dame, and the one was against a 3-9 Michigan State team in a year they were down, a rare down year for Michigan State. I believe he's 1-5 against top 10 teams. This was not another loss because Notre Dame was ranked 12th. They have a stretch in October when they play Wisconsin at home, Michigan State on the road, bye week, Penn State at home. They need to win a couple of those games, especially playing two of them at home. They've got to start beating teams that aren't Maryland or Indiana or Rutgers or Western Michigan, who they play this week, or SMU, who they play next week. I think they need to start beating some good teams. This is Harbaugh's fourth year. It's not like they're in rebuild mode.
You mentioned Maryland. I'm thinking Texas won't want to schedule Maryland for a season opener anymore after the last 2 years.
Maybe they should play him in basketball. It was a stunning loss last year in Austin, and you could kind of write it off to, well, Tom Herman's first game, they're adjusting to a new coach, all the problems they had with Charlie Strong. This one I didn't get at all. Texas was horrible. I don't know how much of that game you saw, but they got the lead and then gave it up. They were down by 2. And then their last 3 possessions in the fourth quarter, they turn the ball over. If you are a good football team, you can't do that. And again, it's not as if they were playing Michigan or Notre Dame or Ohio State or a power school. They were playing a Maryland team that not only isn't that good to begin with, but has been dealing with the entire Jordan McNair controversy, his death and everything surrounding it. Their coach is still on administrative leave, is probably going to get fired. And yet Texas somehow finds a way to lose.
Got a U.S. Open question for you. Not about the guy.
Oh, you're back.
Not about the guy. How are you? Not about the guy who beat Federer and had to wake up at 7 a.m. for his fantasy draft today and was talking at 1 o'clock in the morning about whether he was going to choose Le'Veon Bell or
Gurley.
Todd Gurley. But It took only 2 days once the new stadium, the remodeled Louis Armstrong Stadium, opened, for the USTA and ESPN to figure out that the complaints about the TV angle were legitimate, to rip up 16 seats and to change the camera angle from behind the server. Usually something like this goes through a committee and a whole year of everybody bitching about it. And all of that, I want to dole out some credit that they found a quick solution. How does a quick solution in American sporting controversy happen in America these days?
Well, let me give you the other side of that, Paul. How do you redesign a stadium?
Mess it up in the first place.
Where you're going to have some big matches on the very first match. The number one women's seed, Simona Halep, lost a week ago Monday without testing the camera angles. Well, you know, you don't have to put Simona Halep on the court to test those camera angles. You can put you and me out there.
Yeah.
So I don't understand how they messed it up in the first place, but yes, give them credit for responding to the complaints and getting it fixed quickly. But, you know, when you only have 14 days a year to stage a tournament, you can't afford to deal with committees and things like that when something like this occurs. You better get it fixed quickly, and to their credit, they did. I just don't understand why the mistake happened in the first place.
John Feinstein with us. John, Nike is beginning a major ad campaign with Colin Kaepernick, and Nike is the NFL's official outfitter,
mm-hmm.
and the message with Kaepernick is directed at the NFL. What'd you make of it?
This is fascinating to me, Jonathan, for a number of reasons. Number one, Nike, to me, has always been a company that would do anything to make a buck and would hire anybody, promote anybody to make a buck. I mean, I am an absolute cynic when it comes to Phil Knight and his company. This is a risky move. I've already seen things on Twitter today about people burning Nike gear. They had to do this knowing that there would be some pushback from people who are not fans of Colin Kaepernick or the whole or stand on the other side from him on the whole national anthem issue. I would think, again, Nike is a multi-billion-dollar company, that there was some marketing research done prior to this decision, and that they found that there are people out there who support Colin Kaepernick. Nike markets a lot of its product to African Americans, as we know they always have, dating back to, you know, the Air Jordan shoe. And every teenage boy in America, white or black, frankly, wanted those shoes when they first came out. I will be fascinated to see how this plays out in terms of sales, in terms of publicity. They're going to get some good pub because it's if nothing else, it's a gutsy move, whether you're on their side or not. And I think one thing worth noting is their contract with the NFL is through 2028. And so I'm sure they're figuring that if the NFL is upset, there's really not much they can do for 10 years.
When we come back, I'm going to ask John about Nike's decision with this marketing campaign, and is it important for Nike to make sure their house is in order when it comes to social equality before doing something like this? We'll discuss when we come back.
John Feinstein with us on the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's.
Colin Kaepernick, someone who is standing up against oppression, social issues, and keeping people down. And Nike is a company that has famously had sweatshops paying people in third world countries to make shoes that cost $300 and $400. Is that a fair argument on the other side of this, if you come back at Nike with that, considering they're now trying to profit off of this?
Well, if I was on the other side, I would certainly make that argument. I think it's fair to bring it up, given Nike's past. I don't think, though, that it disqualifies them from deciding to cast their lot with someone who is standing up, as you said, for social inequality and for racial inequality. If they are choosing to say, you know, we think Colin Kaepernick is doing the right thing here, then I have no problem with that. I also have no problem with the idea that people would bring up Nike's past, because that's what you do when you oppose someone on an issue is you bring up past transgressions. And certainly what's gone on with Nike overseas with some of their sweatshops, it's been documented. It's not as if it's in doubt. It's absolutely legitimate to bring it up. I don't think, though, that because you've made mistakes in the past, it disqualifies you from trying to do something that you believe to be correct in the future.
Well, and let's say that Nike is doing this pure of heart. They are siding with Colin Kaepernick on this issue.
Yeah, I don't think Nike's ever pure of heart.
No, I don't either. Not at all. I think they've taken a calculated risk in saying more than 50% of our market agrees with this and we can sell more shoes from this. But let's say that they also deep down believe Colin Kaepernick and they're making a social statement with this. Do you think statements like this are helping the issues with the division in this country when things like this come out, or does it further the divide?
Well, I think any time a public figure, or in this case a public corporation, takes a clear stand, it's going to add to the divide on either side. Now, I mean, go back, you know, as I've mentioned to you, I think I mentioned to you guys before, the week before President Trump went on his rant in Alabama last September. It was September 23rd, I believe, demanding that NFL owners fire the SOBs, his words, who weren't standing for the anthem. The week before that, six NFL players failed to stand for the anthem. That following Sunday, more than 200 NFL players didn't stand for the anthem, and three teams stayed in the locker room entirely. So anytime someone who is in a public figure, no one's more public than the President of the United States, no corporate entity in sports is more public than Nike, anytime someone in that public a position takes a stand, it's going to bring backlash from those on the other side.
I'm wondering your stance on Goodell at this time. He has been, I think, since the Hall of Fame game, invisible. I don't think he needs to be out front because he's bumbled his way through a lot of stuff and he's immensely unpopular. But in terms of him taking a leadership initiative on any of this stuff or responding to any of it, I guess his supporters would say he's behind closed doors trying to iron things out. I think his detractors, including me, think he's going to come out from behind closed doors and change nothing. What do you think of his invisibility at this stage?
You know, Paul, when Goodell first took over for Paul Tagliabue, I thought he was an upgrade. He remember the whole new sheriff in town bit where he was cracking down on players and it, you know, for wrongdoing, whether they were convicted in a court of law or not. He was saying, you know, the protect the shield notion. And then he lost his way. And I think, you know, you cover the league week in and week out. I think he started to lose his way when he completely blew the whole Ray Rice thing. When he didn't understand the significance of what Ray Rice had done to his then fiance and only suspended him for 2 weeks. Then he turned around and tried to make it an indefinite suspension and bumbled his way through a press conference in which he said he was going to be more transparent and then didn't answer any questions directly. And ever since then, it's been downhill for Roger Goodell. Every time he gets out front on an issue, he screws it up. I mean, look at the Flategate. I mean, it dragged on for 2 years, for God's sake. And the whole thing with the bullying incident in the Dolphins locker room with Richie Incognito. One thing after another, he's gotten wrong. So maybe at this point, Paul, his advisors have said, Stay away from a podium. Stay away from TV cameras. Let's hope that this gets resolved in one way or the other without you being out front. That being said, I don't think there's an easy way out for the NFL at this point. Because no matter what they do with this national anthem issue, and the fact that they haven't even been able to reach an agreement with the players before the start of the season certainly isn't a good sign, they are going to get pilloried. By one side or the other, or perhaps both sides.
John Feinstein with us. John, is there any drama to Jim Furyk's announcement later today with the first three picks for the Ryder Cup?
There is as much drama to Jim Furyk's picks this afternoon, Jonathan, as there is, as as there is when they announce the Electoral College. It's going to be Woods, it's going to be Mickelson, it's going to be DeChambeau, and unless Zach Johnson or Kevin Kisner win this week in Philadelphia, and even then, it still might be Tony Finau. It's almost certainly going to be Tony Finau. Usually it's not this clear cut. Usually there are options for a captain. I want a more experienced player here. I want a guy who's hot there. You know, Davis Love had to make a choice on his fourth pick last, in 2016, between Ryan Moore, who was the hot guy, and Bubba Watson, who was the experienced guy. He took the hot guy and it worked out for him because Ryan Moore played very well. But there's absolutely no controversy. I know that Jim Furyk was hoping Matt Kuchar would play his way onto the team, but Kuchar didn't even make it to Philadelphia, shot 74 yesterday to play his way out of the top 70. So even though I know Jim would love to have Kuchar in that team room, he can't pick him. Now, what he might do is make Kuchar and Zach Johnson his vice captains, because he's going to have two slots open since Tiger Woods is going to be on the team and won't be working as a vice captain that week.
John, for a guy who has yet to coach a game with his team, could things have gone any worse for John Gruden and his start with the Oakland Raiders with what's happened?
Well, when you trade your best player, and I don't think anybody would argue with the notion that Khalil Mack is John Gruden's best player, that's certainly not a good way to start, is it? Gruden gave a very – did you guys see or read his press conference after the trade? I mean, it was baffling. On the one hand, he says, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to come here was to coach Khalil Mack. And then, well, did you talk to him at all? No, didn't talk to him at all. I had nothing to do with the trade that Reggie made. But, you know, I thought the Bears made us a unique offer. Well, I expect us to be good right away. We're trying to build a team here. it was baffling. Even more baffling than he was breaking down plays on ESPN. So no, it's certainly not a great start. But you know what's kind of the sad thing, and I mean sad for people in Oakland and for Raider fans, is Gruden's basically going to get a pass until the team gets to Las Vegas. I don't think Mark Davis cares that much about the next couple of years. He'll start really caring about what Gruden is producing for him once the team's in Las Vegas, when he's got to sell seat licenses and season tickets and get sponsors locally and all of that stuff.
It's weird, though, because he's bringing in this old school mentality. You know, he's not into analytics. He has the oldest roster in the league by average age.
Doesn't want to pay a defensive player, a quarterback, what he perceives as quarterback money when that's
I agree. I agree with you, Jonathan. And you know, remember when Joe Gibbs came back to Washington, and Joe Gibbs was, we all agree, one of the great NFL coaches of all time. It's not a fluke that he's in the Hall of Fame. He won three Super Bowls, three different quarterbacks. He wasn't a bad coach, but he sure as heck wasn't Joe Gibbs. There were times on the sidelines during games when he looked baffled, didn't know timeouts, you know, down and distance type of stuff. I think it's very hard to come back after a long layoff, no matter who you are.
John, thank you as always, and we will catch up with you next Monday.
My pleasure as always. I'll look forward to it, Jonathan. Thanks.
Yep. John Feinstein with us every Monday at 12:15.
Big night for MLS in Nashville. Metro Council debating things again tonight. The biggest thing being the third and final reading of the rezoning proposal about those 10 acres. We'll discuss what's to come on a night that might bring us some news during our fantasy football draft next.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. You've heard me recommend People's Home Equity when it's time for your first home loan. You've heard all about how Michael Hampton and the Hampton Group, they help countless people in Middle Tennessee purchase their first home. If that's you, if you're looking to buy your first home, or if you've bought before, you don't want to make a move until you've been to one of the Hampton Group's free home buyer classes. Go get your questions answered. Find out what you need to know in today's competitive housing market. People who have wanted to buy a home have been unable to save up for that down payment, but help has arrived. And the Hampton Group, they have the details for you. Up to $15,000 in down payment assistance. To find out more information, visit NashvilleHomeBuyerClass.com. NashvilleHomeBuyerClass.com is the website for upcoming classes near you. They will tailor make mortgages to fit your needs. They use an individualized approach to assess those needs, and they dominate on all fronts with a winning team. A winning team with decades of experience on their side. Call People's Home Equity today at 615-812-LOAN, 812-5626, or visit them online at 812loan.com. Subject to credit and underwriting approval, equal housing under MLS number 152271, license number 63371.